Hey listeners, welcome back to That Triathlon Show. Today's short form episode is a preview of Thursday's interview with Gordo Byrne. Gordo was an investment banker. He turned that career into a professional triathlon career, and he retired from that career quite some time ago, but he's coaching, he's a great writer about triathlon and other topics, great thinker, and he's somebody I really enjoyed chatting with. And in this clip that you'll hear, Gordo talks about the main mistakes he and the other professional triathletes from that time in the, let's say, 15, 20 years ago time frame that they would be making in training. And he follows that up with a discussion on how to manage load and make training stress adaptive rather than maladaptive, tips for everybody that you can use in your own training and your own life. One super quick thing, I'll speak about this in more detail at the end of this short episode, but I'm doing a listener survey to improve the quality of the podcast. You can find the link to the survey in the episode description or on scientifictriathlon.com/survey. Your feedback is really invaluable, especially points for improvement, constructive criticism. So thank you so much in advance to everybody who fills out this survey. And now on to the clip with Gordo Byrne.
Maybe in today's day and age, we kind of get too overly focused on optimizing rather than just getting the work done. Do you think that that rings true to you?
Yeah. So that's, well, if I talked about, my main training partner was a guy called Klaus Björling in Sweden. And when Klaus and I talk, we're like, we had so much right, but we didn't have the adaptation piece right. That's what we didn't have right. And we see, you know, we see elite females that are now, you know, coming close or in some cases going faster than what we were doing 20 plus years ago. And we're like, if somebody had figured it out and we had been able to study, like, because now we can study great coaches, we can study great athletes and try and figure out, look, what's different? Why are their bodies adapting so well? And we didn't really have that because we were near the top. We assumed we were doing what it took. But so we didn't know, we didn't know the mistakes we were making. Same thing now. I'm absolutely certain now that we continue to make mistakes, but we don't really know how or where we're making the mistakes. Now, where we were, you hit the nail on the head. You've got to maintain the volume, but what we, and the load, but you don't have to maintain the fatigue. Mm. And we have to make sure that the volume and the load is adaptive. In other words, we're getting something from it. Otherwise, we're just making ourselves more tired. We're not making ourselves better. That mindset is something that nobody really had. We were just focused on getting the load and doing ridiculous amounts of load. So we were like, well, what's the limit to the load? So what's the limit to the fatigue? We weren't sort of thinking more tactically and say, look, we got to make sure we're progressing on a six-week basis. Otherwise, we're just making ourselves tired. So that's probably the change. So when I'm training now, yes, absolutely, I want to maintain the load, but I don't want to get myself chronically fatigued. And chronic fatigue is it sneaks up on you. It just comes in really slowly. And when you're getting tired, you can actually look like you're getting fitter. Because what's happening is your heart rate's going to start kind of going down. It's going to be difficult to elevate the heart rate. And if you're doing a lot of endurance training, your efficiency factor, your power versus your heart rate's going to look like it's improving when actually what's happening is you're getting more tired. And so it's getting suppressed. And you'll see things in terms of how you're feeling and your sleep and that. So it's something that I think folks need to be really careful with, particularly, and you don't need to be a high volume athlete for this. If you are a low or a moderate volume athlete, but living a very busy life, there's a lot of non-specific stress that's in your life relative to your training load. And you have to take that into account. You know, how many days are stressful in your week? Not how many days are you doing hard training, but how many days overall are stressful? And what are your periods of adaptation and lower stress that you're going to put into your life so you benefit from it?
Yeah, I absolutely completely agree with that. Maybe if we contrast what you described from your past, your old elite racing days to how you do things now, what are the things you do to, first of all, manage the load, manage things such that you don't experience that chronic fatigue or don't get into that state? And the other question there is, how do you measure that adaptation or the improvement, and try to make sure that you keep having those adaptations?
Okay. So what I do that's probably different, I would say, than almost everyone that I train with, elite and amateur, and way different than my younger self. Half my days are low stress. Now, low stress doesn't mean sitting on the couch. Low stress means it's a day where I'm not activating my sympathetic system. I'm not getting fired up. And that can mean I'm not getting angry. I'm not getting really excited. It's not a stressful day in my life. I'm not traveling. I will train. And that's the, you know, if you get yourself in a routine, you can just live your normal life, and I can train 2 or 3 hours a day and recover. So I can maintain the volume, but I'm shedding stress in those periods. That is a big change. Now, I got that idea from Niels van der Poel's book. And Niels, when everybody... How to Skate a 10K. Yeah. And when you read the book, everybody's mind is blown by the threshold and the specific training, the amount of hours he's doing at 400 watts. But what I noticed in the appendix is in his base training, half his days were off some months. So I was like, you know what? Maybe there's something going on there. Now, I don't do the extreme days like he does. But I was sort of like, you know, rather than having these off days, why don't I just try and do easy days, and I can keep my volume up. Now, what high volume is, obviously, in 2022, that might have been 14 hours. But by carefully doing this year in, year out, I'm in the 18 to 20 hour range now. So, you know, what are we up? We're coming up on the 4-year anniversary this April. So I've just built it up very gradually, this general capacity, and it's worked really well. So this Stephen Saylor talks about the polarizing stress. I look at it a little bit differently, but I took that from him as well. This concept of, we're not going to look at intensity of workout. We're not going to look at intensity of day. We're going to be thinking more in terms of stress. That is a really effective way of looking at it. And another thing that I pulled in is from Olaf Alexander Bue. It's this concept of continuous, that fitness is a continuous function. So we think in terms of discrete days, discrete workouts, discrete intervals. Well, Olaf Alexander says, think about it like a continuous thing. It's never ending. So everything is connected to everything. It's a complex system. And I felt that really hit home to me. And I was like, yeah, he's got it. So if someone's listening and they're like, is a 20-minute workout worth it? Is a 15-minute workout worth it? Is a small set of plyometrics worth it? Well, absolutely, because fitness is a continuous function. These things aren't separate. We don't have to get ourselves exhausted in one session and then recover. What we can be doing is providing continuous stress and adaptation to the athlete as we progress up. It's a very interesting way of looking at a program. And that's also why I think keeping this volume, so keeping the amount going, is helpful, because that is a key part, this flux, this transformation of food to mechanical work is, for me, the fundamental part of developing as an endurance athlete. So this volume piece. The other stuff is interesting, but I'm not sure it makes as big a difference as the volume does. Now, for an amateur athlete that's listening, what your competition is going to struggle with is that piece. This fundamental piece of volume is what most amateurs struggle with, because they have so many other things. going on in their life. And what I say to people is don't negotiate with yourself. So if you're on a limited time, then you need to set up a fixed week, what I call the basic week. So whatever your volume is, keep your weekly plan very consistent. And everyone in your life will learn your plan, including you. And then what's going to change is, yeah, some workouts might be a little longer, a little shorter each week, and you might do some different main sets, but the structure is going to stay the same, and it's going to make your life so much easier. And if because of that, you get an extra 1 to 3 hours a week, across a year, that could be, you might get an extra 100 hours of green zone endurance training just by not shifting things, just by keeping the week the same. And 100 hours is a big chunk of extra volume that is going to help you. And you're not going to be stressing out trying to schedule everything every week as well. So that's going to help the adaptation piece. So whatever you got, set that up in your week. Then you need the discipline not to go 1 or 2 hours over that. When I was working in finance, I noticed that 1 or 2 hours, even one session too much or too hard, would screw up my week because I didn't have the ability, I don't know, to take naps or easy days or whatever, because I had this job that I was trying to figure out. And so I needed to force myself to stay below the limit and needed the discipline for that. So it's what they call it. The Nordics call it like strict intensity control. I was pretty good at that. But then there's also, you have to like not put too much in and, you know, kind of screw up the next week. I always notice if I'm tired this week, it's what happened last week that did it to me. It's not necessarily yesterday. I brought too much fatigue into this week, and that's why I'm tired this week.
Yeah. I know, a slightly tangential example to that, I guess, is that I was thinking about when you said that is from the pandemic and the lockdown period, because personally, I trained the most I ever trained during the lockdown, initial lockdown in 2020. Those first 3 months, basically, I could basically hit 24, 25 hours while I was still working the same amount that I normally did, but there was just nothing else. Like, you literally, there was no reason to go outside the house. So it was just easier. And then as soon as things started to open up even a little bit, and you went for the occasional outing, you went out to see some friends, you went out for a dinner or so once every couple of weeks, perhaps. And even those small things started to make that 24, 25 hours unsustainable. And I had to drop volume because I was starting to experience non-functional overreaching, basically. So it's quite interesting that, or an interesting example of how big an impact those small external stressors have, even though my work didn't change because I was working from home and all of that. So fascinating how you kind of ride that line and those things that are not training related can push you over it or keep you on the right side.
So you just touched on something that is very important in terms of what makes elites fast. So a lot of people think that it's killer sessions or exceptional genetics. But part of what makes elites fast is the lack of anything else in their life. The very best elites are living like you just described. And they are training or eating and sitting in their living room. They're not doing much else. And the people that can stay on top for a long time have some exceptional psychology, because most people are going to want to do something other than just eat, sleep, and train with their life. But to be very fast, it's just relentless simplification. And these things that we add to our lives, such as 3 young children in my house, will have a direct impact on our capacity to recover. I saw very quickly that I didn't have the ability to recover from any real training. And that's what drove me to take a break from competitive racing, because I just noticed that, you know, I kept dropping the volume and I still wouldn't recover. So I was like, you know, I just got to focus on training for health and take a break. And my break actually, I thought it was going to be a year. It ended up being 10 years. It was extended because of COVID, like you touched on. So that is a very important insight. If someone is listening and they're sort of like, well, what can I do to get faster on the same training? You're going to have to simplify other forms of stress in your life, and you'll get more out of whatever training you can do.
I hope you enjoyed that excerpt. Please do listen in on Thursday when I release the full episode, because there's another 1 hour, 45 minutes or so of knowledge shared by Gordo. And now to wrap up for today, here's a clip where I'll talk a bit more about the listener survey. As mentioned, I hope you can spare a few minutes to first listen or go straight to the survey and fill it out. It will only take a few minutes. Regardless, though, have a fantastic week, happy training, and see you on Thursday in the full episode. Hey, listeners, Michael here with an important request for some help. It's been a few years since I last did a listener survey, and I thought it was time to do another one. So my request for you is if you could please fill out the survey that I'll link to in the episode description and that you can find directly on scientifictriathlon.com/survey. That would be an amazing help, honestly. I am super appreciative of everybody who will complete this survey. I'm sure many of you will. So thank you so much in advance for that. The reason behind this survey, just to explain it a little bit further, is that I want to understand what you like about the podcast, what you don't like about it, what I do well, what I can do better, what I'm really bad at, all of these sorts of things that will help me make the podcast better for all of you listeners as a listener experience. I guess you can never make the podcast perfect for everybody because everybody has different tastes, but you can get directional feedback. So the more feedback I get, the better I can understand what the majority of listeners like and don't like. And like I said, I have done surveys like this quite a few times before, and usually the feedback is overwhelmingly positive, which is, of course, great. It makes me happy to read positive feedback and that everything is great, and I do welcome all responses like this. But that being said, the most important feedback I can get is feedback where there are points for improvement. So, for example, I know that a lot of listeners don't listen to all episodes. Yeah, you sample, pick and choose the ones that seem most interesting. So I'd like to know why it is that certain episodes are less liked than others. Is it, what is it about them that makes you less likely to listen to them or more likely to stop early, to not finish listening to an episode? And if the podcast in general is quite far from your ideal triathlon podcast, maybe you just tune in every once in a while and you think it's okay, but you mainly listen when you don't have anything else to listen to, then I would like to know what it would have to be like to be closer to your ideal podcast. So really any sort of constructive criticism, or for that matter, just straight up criticism, directness is completely fine. I'm looking to learn, not to inflate my ego. So let me know what you think, your honest feelings about it, and that would be awesome. One final point, if you've taken the survey before, then you remember that there were a lot of open-ended questions, so it took a few minutes to fill it out, for sure. I've reduced the amount of open-ended questions, so the survey should be quite quick to fill out, but there is, of course, also an opportunity to submit any open-ended feedback that you might have within the survey, so there's space to add that and to type out to your heart's content. But the point being, it won't take you long to complete the survey unless you then end up writing an open-ended essay. So yeah, don't let that stop you thinking it will take long, but it will be much quicker than this spiel that I've done here. So I'll leave it here. Check the link in the episode description to get straight to the survey, or type in scientifictriathlon.com/survey in your browser, and that will take you straight to the survey. Thank you so much.